And welcome into the newest edition of the Fantasy Alarm Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Last week, you had the joy of not hearing me, Colby Conway, at Colby R. Conway, and got to listen to Matt Sells, my regular co-host, and James Grande, who is the, I guess we'll call him, I don't want to call him the tertiary guy, but he's kind of he's the fill-in when needed for us. And it's good to hear. I got to tune in a little bit last week. I was in Mexico, for a little vacation, got to tune in and heard some Pirates and Texans slander in the beginning and a little upset by that, but I got past it. So Matt Sells with me at The Sellsman on Twitter. Other than trashing my teams in the beginning of last week, it's good to be back with you. And how is everything going for you, my friend?
It's going pretty well. I do have to say it's 2 days before my kids' spring break and it snowed here this morning. So there's that. I mean, not a lot of snow, just, you know, dusting some nice big flakes that were pretty fun to look at, but things are good outside of baseball. And then baseball happened today, and aside from Shohei Ohtani dual threat dominating in the WBC, things are not so great for those of us who are looking to draft a big name pitcher. It's kind of concerning news we got out of Yankees camp today. So other than that, I'm doing all right.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's one of those things in the off season, we don't, I guess, oh, we're preseason now, but in the off season, we don't quite get those injury updates and everything's ho-hum, everything's fine. There's many big breaks, but at some point, you know, we see it mostly in football. You know, at some point, these guys got to start playing football. And here, at some point, these guys got to start playing baseball. Stuff is going to happen, as we have seen. So we're going to spend a little bit of time on injury talk, and then we're going to get into some other stuff that we've seen beyond the injuries. But the first one we have to touch on, top fantasy arm. Let me re-clarify. One of the top fantasy arms going down with the forearm strain. If you've listened to the podcast before, you know Matt and I, whenever it's forearm, you might as well just throw up a big X, because we are mostly out for the most part when it comes to it, because he's not going to fall to a spot where we can get him. But Carlos Rodon of the New York Yankees will not throw for 7 to 10 days, then will be reevaluated with a forearm strain. Matt, Carlos Rodon at this point, I know we're both anti-forearm, so I kind of know where you're going with this. I'll make it easier for you. Can you comfortably draft Rodon if you're in a slow draft right now that just started, or maybe your home league draft is maybe Saturday or Sunday night? Can you feel comfortable drafting Rodon with a dreaded forearm issue?
Well, I'm torn on this one. So let me preface this by saying I would prefer to be drafting after the 7 to 10 days are done and get more clarity on where he is in the process, or what treatments they've done for it or whatnot. So like for my home draft, right, I don't draft until March 25th. So at that point, hoping to have enough info to make a decision about Rodon and drafting him. If you're in a slow draft now, I might see how slow the draft is moving and just try to play it out. That being said, and I know typically we are out on guys with forearm issues because it's usually code name for something else, right? Like Walker Buehler went down with a forearm strain late last year, and everybody and their mother knew it was going to wind up being Tommy John, but for some reason he delayed the surgery so long that now he's going to miss the entirety of this year as opposed to coming back in the middle of this year because he wound up having Tommy John. Carlos Rodon, though, according to at least Brian Cashman, who is there's a video of him on going around Twitter being interviewed by the Yankee beat writers, saying that Rodon had this issue last year and basically pitched through it and didn't wind up missing any time. So I guess that's a little comforting, but also, like, is this a long-term thing, right? Like, did he pitch on borrowed time last year, and now the Yankees are the ones that are picking up the pieces from it? Or is he truly going to be okay like he was last year? I don't know. So there's a little bit of hope there, but also part of me is like, well, he pitched with this for a year. Is this now just the last, like, you've stretched it as far as it can go, and now you're going to have to like miss a chunk of time to actually heal it. So if you're drafting right now, I might look elsewhere just because we don't know everything yet. If you're drafting later in March, like maybe the week of, like I have another draft that's literally the night before the season starts, right? If you're drafting the last week of March, then just wait to see what the news is. There's nothing you can do about it right now. So that's kind of where I stand on Rodon.
And I think you hit the right point. You kind of talked about borrowed time that he might be on. To me, the way I envisioned it, maybe it's the pessimist in me, or I guess the optimist in me wants to say it's the realist in me and looking at it this way, but is he just kicking the can down the curb? Right. Or are we just, you know, you keep walking forward, no matter how far you kick the ball or kick the can or kick the stone, you're going to catch up to it. It's going to catch up to you at some point. So let me ask you this. Since February 1st, Rodon's the 11th pitcher off the board. Yes or no, I'm going to move up these guys behind him. Are you going to take Rodon over them? So right behind him, McClanahan.
McClanahan should be in the top 10.
Correct.
To begin with.
Verlander.
Yes.
Cease.
I don't know, man. Did you see his start today in spring training?
I sure did, given that, you know, he was a guy that I put as a potential bust candidate. So I'm kind of watching him under a microscope because he's a high profile guy.
His last spring training start, he went 2/3 of an inning, gave up 7 hits and 11 earned runs. So I don't know, man. I traded him last year. I kind of regretted it a little bit, but I think there's regression. Like, he's just, yes. The control is too much of an issue for me.
What about Scherzer?
Yes, I'll draft him over Rodon.
Bieber?
Yeah, he should have been up there in the, I mean, I don't get why he's down there to begin with.
But. And then the next four after that are Wheeler, Julio Urias, Luis Castillo, Christian Javier. So the fact that you're thinking there, Wheeler's down at 18. So you've already moved Rodon back. I mean, maybe Cease falls a little bit too, but you've already dropped Rodon 7 spots, which is actually about a round and a half in 15 team formats, or nearly 2.5 rounds in 10 team setups. That's how far you've already just committed to moving Rodon now, which I think is fair. I think it's very fair.
I mean, that's for me still being in on Rodon despite the forearm. Yeah, I mean, if I'm drafting right now, I'm going a couple rounds later on him and just hoping for the best.
I think that's the way to attack it as well. Staying in the American League East, in Toronto, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., a little bit of, I believe it's knee inflammation, I believe is the word that they called it. He's like doing straight line work and some stuff. They don't really seem too concerned about opening day. I believe he withdrew from the WBC.
Yes.
So any concern with him for opening day? I don't really think there's too much to be worried about with Vladdy, but I mean, I'm not moving him down because of this news, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
No, I'm not that concerned. It's bound to, you know, creep up on you when you start moving more than you have in the last few months. And I mean, because keep in mind, these guys are actually playing games now. They're not just standing there doing hitting drills or standing there doing fielding practice, right? They're actually running, they're moving, they're, you know, going through the whole game actions, and that tends to work things a little differently than just doing drills. Plus, it popped up on him throughout last year, too, if I remember correctly. He sat a couple of days in a row for this, so I'm not overly concerned. It's not going to be an IL. Like, Rodon is going to start the year on the IL, is basically what the Yankees said. We're not to that point with Vlad, so I'm not that concerned.
And with a guy like Vlad too, I mean, obviously just stick him at, you can stick him at DH, right. And then at first base they can do Alejandro Kirk, they could do Brandon Belt. I'm hoping it's Belt. Yep. My TGFBI team is really hoping it's Belt because I drafted him very late, so hoping it's him, but not much to be worried about.
Here's the thing, if you hit him out of that softball park they call home in Toronto, you can run around the bases as slow as you want to.
A good idea.
So cheat code for Vladdy.
Absolutely. And last one, injury talk before we talk about some other stuff we've seen in spring. I don't want to throw it out there, but you know, Dusty Baker, maybe a little ageist, if I can say that. You know, he's basically already said if Michael Brantley is healthy, and it sounds like he's going to be on track for opening day, he is hitting second in that lineup. And I mean, the quote was something along the lines of, actually, it's not along the lines of, it was, if Brantley is in the lineup, Brantley is number two. I know Pena's been good, but Pena ain't been good as long as Brantley. Okay. So first off, wherever Michael Brantley's going in drafts, if he's healthy, even if he only hits 9 home runs and hits for a 270-ish average, he's going to score a hell of a lot of runs because that's a darn good lineup.
He's behind Altuve and in front of Kyle Tucker, Jordan, and Jose Abreu.
And if they're going to stick Pena, I don't think they'd put him at 9. I think they try to put him 6 or 7 probably. But if Pena hits 9, that means you have Pena and Altuve ahead of Brantley, and then the boys behind them.
I think they almost, if you're not going to hit Pena second, you almost have to hit him 9th.
That's the second leadoff guy.
Right, because now you're creating a circular line. Because here's the thing.
And someone who can turn the lineup over.
Right. If your argument is that you want Pena to be good, he just hasn't shown it for more than a year, which, okay.
Well, whose fault is that?
But it's not really his fault. Yeah. It's like y'all didn't call him up a year earlier. But he's also like the defending. Didn't he win the World Series MVP last year, if I'm not mistaken? So like, that's kind of a diss on a guy who showed up in big moments for you. But secondly, if you're going to hit, like, if you want him to be good in a part of the offense, after Jose Abreu, you've still got Bregman to fit in there, right? Are you hitting Bregman 5th and Abreu 6th? And then the only guys left are whoever your starting catcher is, I presume, Martin Maldonado. And then Chaz McCormick starting in center field. And then Pena. So if you put Pena in front of those two, he's not going to get anything to hit. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, if my choice is pitching to Jeremy Pena or Chaz McCormick, I'm going to pick McCormick.
Yeah.
Or Maldonado.
Yeah. And like, so the
you've got to hit him 9th.
Yeah, and the other thing too is like if in between the lines, if Dusty Baker's saying, well, I need a lefty in there because of a righty, it's not even a righty top heavy lineup.
Right.
Kyle Tucker, you want to hit him too? Hell, hit Jordan too. I don't care. But
I mean,
I understand
too would be. I mean, here's the thing. What are you doing with the speed that Tucker has? Because at some point when you hit him in the middle of the lineup, you're taking his legs away from him.
Well, if there have been reports that apparently the contract might be tougher with Tucker, if you want to drop him down a little bit. I mean, his other numbers are going to be fine. But, you know, instead of him saying I'm a 30-30 guy, I'm only a 30-20 guy if he's going to run less. And maybe they use that in contract negotiations because it's a business. I get it. Okay, but
so here's an interesting thing. If you look at roster resource, they have Altuve, then Brantley, Bregman, Jordan, Abreu, Tucker 6th, Pena 7th, McCormick 8th, and Maldonado 9th.
I think you got to go Pena 9.
I think you got to go Pena 9 because otherwise
you're not turning the lineup over.
You're not. Yeah, you just got two basically dead spots.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like McCormick is terrible, but like.
No, it's just. This Pena or this Brantley hitting second really just throws a wrench into everything.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, the guy doesn't run and he doesn't have pop anymore.
He's coming off a shoulder. So who like there was already diminished pop last year. I mean, right. How much if was a shoulder
if
in play?
If you want a professional hitter, then why not put a professional hitter like further down so that any run, like any late inning rally you need can get jump started by Brantley. And then all you need is a base runner at that point, right? Then other guys can connect with one, right? Like, I don't get the Brantley hitting to thing. And if your argument, and if his argument is it sets up a righty lefty, righty lefty, righty lefty, righty top seven,
there's better lefties.
You've got Yordan and Kyle Tucker, who are both lefty, who should be higher than Brantley in the lineup. So,
yeah. And like, ultimately, like, I understand Brantley's got a 355 plus OBP for six straight years now. Again, some injuries in there and such. But for the rare occasion he stays healthy, no, let's say no one on the team for Houston gets hurt, right? Everybody has 600 at bats because it just works out perfectly like that. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, say the second spot has 650 and, you know, you work your way down from there. Wouldn't you prefer 650 at bats from Tucker or Alvarez compared to 650 from Brantley?
Or like, help Pena?
Or, yeah, even Pena at that point. It's just, I understand why you put him there. He gets on base. He makes contact. He can do things for the offense. Maybe we're looking too much from a fantasy realm from it. Now, Brantley's a steal late, though. Don't get me wrong. Like, if you need average and runs at this point, I'm fine with him because he's going outside the top 400. So, at that point, he's a fine value. But
yeah,
it's not exciting for fantasy outside of the 1/2 categories he's going to impact.
Okay, here's my question, because Nimmo is kind of a similar guy. Would you rather have Brantley or Nimmo?
Well, I mean, in a vacuum, it's going to be Nimmo. He at least provides a little more with the bat in terms of power. But if we're talking price per dollar spent, it's kind of hard to argue with Brantley outside of 400.
Right, because Nimmo's going so much higher in drafts, but he's essentially, like, outside of a few more homers.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you presume that Brantley hits maybe 10 homers, right? I think that's being a little generous, but let's say he gets to 10 homers. Like, Nimmo had 16 last year in 150 games. So, like, outside of a handful of homers, I think they're pretty close. Because Nimmo doesn't really steal.
And Brantley ain't running anymore.
No.
He'll get one.
They both provide, I mean, better average for Brantley, better on-base percentage for Nimmo. You can make the argument that the Astros lineup is a tad better than the Mets lineup. But I would say, like, in a straight-up production, like taking price point out of it, it'd be Nimmo. But in a price per dollar, it gets a lot closer for me.
Yep, absolutely. And unfortunately, stuff's going to keep popping up. We'll continue to talk about it as things go along, as we get closer and closer.
What about Yordan's hand? Are you concerned at all?
I would say my concern is higher than where it was a week ago.
I would agree. Because he's not really doing – he's not swinging.
I believe he's supposed to swing in the coming days.
Right. But
that's a swing.
Now we're a week closer to the season starting, and he hasn't ramped up. So, yes, I'm starting to get a little more concerned.
Yes.
But there's nothing surgically wrong. It's just pain, basically, at this point. So.
Yep. I agree. But we'll see. And a week from now, I hope my concern is quelled a little bit, because there's been some good news there. But it's more than it was a week ago, which is also more than it was a week ago from that point. So it's kind of where I stand with Yordan. And of course, as we're getting into spring training games, pitch velocity for the pitchers, such a fickle position, is something that is being dissected, scrutinized, analyzed, everything in between. So just going to touch on a couple of, I guess, what I deem to be interesting names from what we have seen. So, and Matt, I just want to get your thoughts on these and kind of what we should see for the season. So in Toronto, you actually talked about before we jumped on here, I highlighted Alek Manoah in particular as his velo is down. You said it might be a Toronto thing. That could be hashtag Toronto thing, that it's down across the board, and Chris Bassett was also down. So let's focus in on Manoah first. He's the higher fantasy profile guy. His velo's down a little bit to begin spring. Do you have any concern at this point in time, as we're recording this on March 9th, with a little bit of a velo drop for Manoah here in his first handful of spring starts?
No, because, like, we've seen several pitchers of late do this, right? There's been some talk over the last few years of some big-name guys whose velo early in spring, everybody was concerned about. And then by the time it got to May, it was right back to where it was, right? And the fact that there are two different Blue Jays pitchers doing this, and Bassett has come out and said it's because I want to, like, make sure my arm is good for the long haul. I think Toronto believes they can win this division this year. And with the Carlos Rodon news, if it's bad news, I don't see how Toronto doesn't win the division, to be honest. So I think it's more about pacing for them. And look, it's a weird spring. It's kind of a short, it's more of a compact spring. And maybe they're also pacing themselves because the pitch clock may have a little more effect on their stamina as the season goes, perhaps. I don't know, but I'm not, it's not like it was an instantaneous drop, right? It's not like we saw Manoah go out and pump 98 and then the next start he was down to 92, which would be a telltale sign something is wrong. He's been consistently under, and I think it's him and Bassett just building up. I'm not that concerned about it.
And I think you hit the nail on the head, and like the pitchers, even if they're in good shape, this is an adjustment. They're not used to this. You know, if you were ramped up and everything, you could take your time. You know, we got the pitch clock now. I think that's playing a part into it. They just have to adjust to that. I'm in agreement with you. Manoah's velo being down, I'm not overly worried about it. And it's not all that drastic, so it's not something that I think warrants too much concern. Much like I think Edwin Diaz's velocity is a little bit down, I'm not going to harp too much on this one. It's a closer. Adrenaline is a hell of a drug. You know, that, you know, when he comes out for spring training, I could be wrong. I don't think he's getting Timmy trumpets.
I'm pretty sure they don't do Timmy trumpets.
Or Timmy, I guess Timmy Trump, it's not his song, but he's the one that did it the one time on the thing. But I don't believe there's any trumpet thing. He doesn't have the adrenaline. Closers, I'm not as concerned about for the most part, especially top pedigree ones like Diaz. Would you agree?
I would agree. I'm not all that. And look, we're also entering a time where, yes, everybody's talking about velo and whatnot, but there's starting to become discussion that it's not all about velo to strike guys out. It's about movement. It's about count, like being counterintuitive to what pitch you're throwing in what count. It's about more breaking pitches. And so look, we saw Thor be really effective last year, right? This is a guy who's known for pumping straight heat and striking guys out. Did he strike out as many guys last year? No. Did he stay healthy the whole season? Yes. Was he still effective? Yeah, he still struck out a pretty decent amount of guys and kept guys on their toes. So, you know, maybe if these guys had to pitch it close to max effort to hit those speeds, then maybe this is a wiser decision. Or they're just pacing themselves, right? Like, think about, like, Colby, when you played, you didn't go full bore right into game action as fast as physically possible, right? Y'all did a couple of weeks of ramping up, and you did drills, and even the first games you weren't really going full speed because your body's still getting used to stuff. So I'm not going to put a whole lot of emphasis on spring training velos unless we see a guy who one start looks fantastic and is pumping it in there at like 95, 98, and the next start is like 5 miles an hour slower. Then you get concerned because there's something wrong, right? But spring training is also time for these guys to work on stuff. Maybe they're working on spin and they're not getting as much velo. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's definitely a lot that goes into it. And I think a lot of times when we see pitch velocities and stuff, the bigger thing at play is whether you are in or out on that guy and using that as like confirmation bias, right? Exactly. So like, for example, I'm going to skip a guy in here, but in Miami, I really want AJ Puck to emerge as the closer. So am I looking into Dylan Floro's velocity being down a little bit? 100% I am, because I'm kind of very invested into Puck being the closer.
It plays into your narrative that you want.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, Dylan Floro's, everything was within reason. His fastball was about a mile and a half, uh, mile, mile per hour slower, basically. So let me just quick question about Floro here. Which are you more concerned about, the average about of a 3/4 to a mile an hour drop across the board for his pitches, or that he didn't register any whiffs on 6 swings? Which of those do you buy into more at this point?
I'm more concerned at the not registering whiffs, because a closer's job is to come in and miss bats, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't get a job being a closer if you're an 80% contact guy and you're relying on your defense, right? So the fact that he's not inducing whiffs, now I don't know if that's because the velo isn't fully there and he needs the velo to get more spin to induce the whiffs or whatever. I don't know, but I'm more concerned about the not missing bats at this point.
Yeah, when you look, and especially last year, nearly a 37% O swing rate, but a sub 10 swinging strike rate. Want to see him, because like you said, you know, closers, they come on with guys in base. It could be runner on third with one out. That ground out, that's cool. Guess what? That run's still scoring, most likely. You know, so that's going to affect the numbers a little bit. But also, in that game where we last saw Floro, we did see a particular Washington southpaw that could be interesting this year, health willing. But Mackenzie Gore, unlike everybody we've talked about here, most of his velo was up. Changeup was up nearly 3 miles an hour. Fastball was within a half a mile an hour, even though it was slightly down. But he did post a 20% whiff rate on each of his 4 pitches. So McGore's still going to be relatively cheaper in drafts, just kind of given the history and everything like that. But this first start's got to give people some optimism for what could be in 2023, right? Even if it's a subpar offense backing him.
Yes. Firstly, I would say of anybody on this list, he has the most rest of anybody, because he was also injured and was shut down after the trade to Wash. I think he made, what, one appearance for Washington, if I remember correctly, and then was shut down. So he's had a good extra couple of months of rest, which he needed because there was elbow concern there. But yeah, it is in general, I think, part of the reason why he struggled a bit last year was the velo wasn't staying, right? He would, some starts he would have great velo and then he would drop because he's a young guy. Stamina and keeping velo consistent is tough for a young pitcher. So I am intrigued to see that. I would like to see Josiah Gray's fastball improve, because it's been his absolute weakest pitch and has made him a sitting duck out there. But in general, I'm intrigued by what I see from Mackenzie Gore. Also, by the way, full disclosure, said by a guy who has kept him in 2 leagues this year. One is a dynasty league and one is a keeper league with prospects that I had to pay for Mackenzie Gore this year, because due to weird rules, I actually wound up having to use Mackenzie Gore to cover an open spot in my roster. He pitched an inning and a third, then got hit, and then didn't pitch again. So I didn't get anything out of him for last year, and I had to pay for him. But so, yes, I am intrigued as a Nats fan and as a guy who kept him, but also just as a baseball fan, it's good to see Mackenzie Gore getting back to what made him really, really popular coming out of high school when the Padres took him.
Yep. I like Gore, and this is something, again, plays into your narrative. If you want Gore to be good, you're buying into exactly this. That's what it comes down to. But last one I got here, Zach Gallen, fastball was down 2 miles an hour, cutter down about a mile and a half per hour, and changeup was down 3. Look at his year minus average. It was, or his year was 94.1, and then yesterday was only at 92 with a low of 88. He didn't even max out at what he averaged with his 4-seam fastball last year. Now, to his credit, this was his first start of the spring. Yeah. You know, I think as the farther you go along into spring with each passing start, the velo questions come into it. First opening start, though, for Gallen, what is the level of concern compared to, like, Manoa?
Basically relatively the same. Yeah. Like, it's Gallen's first start. He's a guy who's had plenty of history of injuries and not being able to stay on the mound. What he did last year gave us a peek into what he could be. And by the way, can we give props to the Diamondbacks and Marlins for making that prospect for prospect trade that seems to have worked out well for both teams? Like, a couple years ago, they made the trade deadline deal that was prospect for prospect. And a lot of people were like, why are you just swapping prospects? It doesn't seem like usually if you're trading a prospect, you're getting a big league guy, right? Because the deal was Jazz Chisholm went from the Diamondbacks to the Marlins, and the Marlins gave up Zach Gallen to go to the Diamondbacks for Jazz Chisholm. That deal seems to have worked out very nicely for both teams, and they both got what they needed. Miami still has pitching depth. The Diamondbacks needed it. The Marlins didn't have a middle infielder or freak athlete. Now they have one. And the Diamondbacks still have three ridiculously good outfield prospects and Ketel Marte to play in the middle. So props to those two for making that deal. But again, I'm not that concerned with Zach Gallen. It's his first start. It'll be all right. And by the way, we have a quote from Carlos Rodon here. Oh, I don't know if it changes your opinion. This came out. This is being tweeted out by Brian Hoke or Hawk. I'm pretty sure it's Hoke. Yeah, because he says in his bio, his name rhymes with Coke. That's convenient. He's the Yankees beat writer. But the quote from Carlos Rodon is, quote, "I'm not here to pitch until the All-Star break. I'm here to pitch well into October. If this was down the stretch, yeah, I would be going for sure. If this is October 5th or the ALDS, I'm taking the ball."
So we'll see him in May.
Yes.
That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, is that it's precautionary so it doesn't get worse and that he can then pitch in. But if need be, he'd go out there and wouldn't have a problem.
Okay. Well, we'll see Carlos Rodon in May. So adjust your adjust your rankings accordingly. That's what I gathered from that. So, you know, kind of along the lines of kind of pitch velocity that we see, and I want to get your take, Matt, on some early spring performances and whether you are buying or selling these early spring performances heading in to the 2023 season. So first and foremost, a guy I wrote up in our shared sleeper article that you can get in the draft guide, which is, of course, free. So make sure you go get that. We'll talk about the cheat sheet a little bit later on, but the draft guide is free. Get that. Go get your copy of the cheat sheet and everything like that. But a popular sleeper that I liked, Eduardo Rodriguez. I didn't like the fences moving in a little bit in Detroit, but I think I wrote he's got an opt-out after this year. So if you want to play the contract year narrative, you can with Rodriguez. And after last year, he should be poised to bounce back. And he has looked excellent this spring. So Matt, are you buying or selling Eduardo Rodriguez?
I'm buying him, actually. I know there's not really an offense there to back him up in Detroit, but to be perfectly honest, there's not an offense that scares me in basically the entire AL Central. I mean, you know, the Indians just kind of piecemeal things together. Maybe the White Sox, but a bunch of their dudes can't seemingly stay healthy long enough to make an impression. So, I liked what he did down the stretch last year. I thought he was pretty good down the stretch. He's not an elite guy. He's not being drafted to be an elite guy. I think you could do worse for a mid-level fantasy starter than Eduardo Rodriguez.
I think, yeah, and I mean he's super cheap. That's what makes him a sleeper, right? Because he's going late. There's upside, and I want to kind of talk about here, shameless plug, I guess, with the sleep article that I put. But I basically said, I said Rodriguez can opt out of his deal after 2023. So technically there is the contract year narrative, but in spring training, we need to see a return to more levels with his velo and see if the complimentary offerings have more bite to them here this season. And when you look at his last start, you will see that the velo was slightly up. So again, we are playing that to our narrative. So I like that. And the whiffs were there to a certain extent. So got to like the early returns for Eduardo Rodriguez. And I mean, we're talking 10 strikeouts to one walk in 8 1/3 innings of work here in the spring. Outside of the top 300 picks, you can't do much worse than that.
Yeah. And by the way, for those of you that might be saying, well, the pitch clock is in effect this year, so strikeouts might be up. That's not actually true. strikeout rates this spring are actually down, according to a number that Jeff Passan tweeted, the strikeout rate is 23.1% so far this year. It was 23.9% last year. So still posting good strikeout numbers in an actually less favorable environment to strike guys out.
Yep. And then teammate of Eduardo Rodriguez, Matthew Boyd, coming on strong. Everyone's going to talk about the 7 strikeout performance he had against St. Louis. So now he's up to 11 strikeouts, 1 walk across 5 innings pitched, has allowed 2 home runs. Are you buying or selling Matthew Boyd?
Can I hold?
Yes, you can hold.
Like, I want to like him, given the pedigree behind him. But I feel like I need to see a little bit more. Like, he was good down the stretch. Again, these are second half guys. They kind of got, you know, not paid attention to, but I want to see a little bit more before I fully jump in on Boyd.
What about in Boston with Tristan Casas, who's 8 for 18, 2 home runs, 6 RBIs, only has 4 strikeouts through 18 at bats. Seems like he's locked into a regular role with Boston. So maybe necessarily in terms of like buying or selling Casas' spring performance, but are you willing to move him up at all in your rankings with this hot start that he's had with the spring?
Well, let's see where. It's funny that you should ask, because I'm actually looking at my rankings right now, because I have to update them based on the Carlos Rodon news. So right now I have Tristan Casas sitting 21st in my fantasy, in my first base rankings. Yeah, I'll probably move him up a few spots. I'm still not totally convinced that the offense around him is that great in Boston. I'm also not 100% convinced he's not getting anything but fastballs in spring training, because that's why Jared Kelenic looks friggin' awesome, is that he just crushes fastballs and can't hit anything else.
Was that a kind of a jab at Kelenic there?
Yeah,
that was kind of uncalled for.
What? Why? I mean, he's having good numbers. Like, everybody's falling in love with Kelenic again. Okay, but if you look at like somebody tweeted out, hey, he got into a 2-strike count and waited for his pitch and then smoked it. Yeah, his pitch was a fastball dead middle. Like, congratulations. If you're going to make a major league roster, you should be able to crush a fastball down the middle, unlike Josh Donaldson.
So yeah, are you rudely selling Kelenic's performance then so far this spring?
I'm not sold on it. I have, like, basically an entire year of him sucking in the majors and destroying AAA. And so it's like, well, are you actually facing high quality pitching or not? And are they actually, like, giving you tough pitches to hit, or have you made that big of an improvement? So I'm not sold on Kelenic yet. I'm getting there with Casas. I'm not ready to crown him a top 10 first baseman, right? But, like, maybe, I don't know. Like, right now, 15 through 21 is Rizzo, Mountcastle, Tellez, Cronenworth, Jose Miranda, Luis Arraez, and Tristan Casas.
Yeah.
Are you convinced to take Casas over any one of those guys? Maybe Miranda and Arraez?
Yeah.
Hard to beat Cronenworth's multi.
Yeah, that does help him.
I mean, same with Arraez, but
I would take him above Arraez.
There's no power with Arraez, so.
Yeah, it's a team build thing, right? Like, at that point, you're going to have to, if you're waiting at first base, you're going to take whatever you need. If you need more average, you go elsewhere. If you need,
right.
You know, the pop, you can go with Casas.
But I'm not saying he's ahead of, like, I'd still take Mountcastle over him. I'd still take Tellez over him.
Would you take Josh Bell over him?
Probably.
I think I would too.
And I have Bell 14th, by the way. He's one spot ahead of Rizzo.
Oh, then yeah, you definitely like him. But okay. Yeah. So we're definitely buying it, like the early returns there with him. Let me ask you this one. In Cincinnati, Will Benson, we're gonna talk about another Cincinnati guy in a little bit that I'm gonna surprise you on, even though you probably know who it is. But Benson's hitting an even 500. Only problem is every single hit has been singles. So his
slugging.
slugging matches. slugging matches the average. Now, he does have four stolen bases. If you look at roster resource, they don't have him breaking camp with the team, having him go to the minors. Is there any chance you think that he can force himself onto the roster? Because when you look, I mean, their outfield, it seems like they're going to kind of platoon most of the outfield in that, you know, Fraley and TJ, was it Friedel? I think it's Friedel. Yeah. Friedel's there. But then on the bench, like Chad Pinder's going to face lefties. We know that. That's just going to happen. And then I guess maybe they mix in Stuart Fairchild. But any chance that Benson can break camp with the team, you think, with this performance? I mean, with eight singles, let me say that.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I will say, though, Zips is apparently drinking the coffee because the Zips projections are way higher on him than anybody else. Like, Zips has him at 118 games played.
Whew.
Hitting 15 homers, 10 steals, 66 runs, 58 RBI, which you would take, right, until you see his average of 210.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is in line with basically every other system, including the 316 OBP and the 383 slugging. So not great, and everybody's got him for about a 30% K rate. So it's like an all-or-nothing approach with him, it seems. And everybody else, by the way, has him with like five or fewer homers and steals and a smattering of other stats. So I don't know. He'll get a shot at some point. I can't – like, making contact is great, but – I need more than just a singles hitter.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta prove to me you can drive a baseball.
And let me, since we're in Cincinnati, I think I know at least one of them. Ellie De La Cruz is the big name, right?
Yes.
He's not breaking camp with the team. They're going to preserve his service time, right?
I would presume so. I don't see why there's any, I just don't see why there's any reason to bring him up to a team that's clearly not going to. I mean, they're fighting for fourth place in that division.
Is the same going to be said for Christian Encarnacion and Strand? Do you think he can break camp of the team, or is he another service time preserver? Because he's looked darn good too.
He's looked really good.
Also, I really like Spencer Steer, but I mean, he's getting overshadowed by all these guys, and it's not like he's been horrible.
I mean, since he's got a sneaky good farm system.
Yeah.
Like, you just named three guys that could easily make the camp, like, make the team out of camp, but probably won't. Like, Spencer Steer might. He's got about the best chance. I'm not sure that Christian Encarnacion Strand will. I think they're going to let him simmer for a little bit. I really do. I think good days are ahead for you, Cincinnati fans. It's just not today. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's coming, but
I think Spencer Steer is probably their starting third baseman to start the year.
I do too. I think that's what roster resource says too. So I don't think we're reinventing the wheel there.
No, but I mean, I would have been drafting him that way starting in like February, right? Like, I just don't know that you can make a reasonable. Okay, like, so here's the question. You're playing Ellie De La Cruz in the outfield, right? Because you're not you had to move him off of where you drafted him. Like, you're not going to play him at third base because you've got Spencer Steer there. He's going to get first crack at it. Shortstop, I mean, I guess you could play him at shortstop over Kevin Newman, but like, there's no. There's nobody forcing your hand at this because you're not competing for anything. Right. And adding Ellie De La Cruz to your roster isn't the last piece you need, right? You're not moving De La Cruz to the outfield. So I think those guys might be up midseason, but I don't think they're breaking camp.
Yep. I think you're right there. And the last one I got for you here, had to look up the pronunciation for this one, but Brandon Fought in Arizona has looked pretty good this spring. You know, we're looking here, 5 innings with a 6-2 strikeout to walk ratio, only allowed 2 hits. He's looked quite good. The one thing that intrigued me about him, so I won't bury the lead here. I'm buying the spring. Do I know if he'll break the rotation with the team? I'm not entirely sure, but one thing that does intrigue me is once he gets the call, I know minor league innings aren't quite the same as major league innings, but in 2021, he logged 131 innings. And then last year he logged 167 total innings. So I think when he gets the call, if it's not breaking camp with the team, there's not going to be an innings limit on him. Like, he just threw 167 innings last year. He should be good to go with 61 of them coming in AAA, 105 at AA. So if he does break camp with the team, I'm very, very intrigued. And if he doesn't, he's a guy I'm putting on my watch list waiting for him to get the call. So what do you think about his early spring returns?
I think they've been phenomenal. I would say that he's talked himself into being probably the second best arm in the Diamondbacks system behind Ryan Nelson. I previously had Blake Walston ahead of him, but I don't anymore. Does he get a shot in the opening day rotation? Maybe. I'm not 100% sold on Ryan Nelson holding down that spot.
He had a rough outing, too.
He did. I think he might be better suited for a high leverage bullpen, because it's not like they don't have enough dudes who could close games there in in Arizona. They got about four or five guys that could possibly get you saves in that bullpen.
Well, it's like with college football. If you have two quarterbacks, how many quarterbacks do you actually have?
Yeah, exactly. So. But by the way, here's a trivia question for you. I'm going to read off the names of the projected starting five for the Diamondbacks.
Okay.
I want you to tell me who the oldest pitcher in this rotation is. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You have Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly, Mad Bum, Zach Davies, and Ryan Nelson.
Well, my first thought, the way you word it makes me think my first thought is Bumgarner. But the way you word it makes me think it's not Bumgarner.
It's not Bumgarner.
Then it would, I think. Is it? Well, it's Davis. It's Davies or Kelly.
Zach Davies is three and a half years younger than Mad Bum.
So it is Merrill Kelly then.
Merrill Kelly is 34 and a half. Mad Bum is 33 and a half.
Wow.
That's like.
That's insane.
And Zach Davies is still only 30, which is. Like, how can Mad Bum and Zach Davies both still be only 33 and 30?
Yeah.
But yeah. Just one of those things that pops up when you're studying things like this. Just a weird, like, I'm not sure anybody would have guessed Merrill Kelly.
I wouldn't have. Like I said, my first thought of me, if I had to put money, I was gonna be Bumgarner. That was Mad Bum. That would have been who I would have thought. But
yeah.
That's a good one. I like that one. I'm gonna use that at a next trivia night where I come up with questions and see if everyone's going to say Bumgarner, but I like that. But
I mean, because he's been in the league for like 87 years.
That is very true. He sure has. But that is all the time that we're going to have here. Don't want to, go over too much as we already are, because I, of course, lost track of time again, as I seem to do in these episodes, but so much stuff is happening here in spring training. We got to talk about it. So of course, give me a follow on Twitter at Colby R. Conway. Give Matt a follow on Twitter at The Salesman. Head over to www.fantasyalarm.com and get your free copy of the draft guide. And if you have a draft that is coming up or is in the even coming weeks or just the next couple of days, make sure you download the cheat sheet. It is the main resource that you will need to crush your drafts and get all of the good players that will set your team up for success for a title. But of course, there's in-season management that has to be done. That is 95% of the work. So this will at least give you off to a good start. So once again, fantasyalarm.com for the cheat sheet and your free fantasy baseball draft guide. So give Matt a follow on Twitter. Give me a follow on Twitter. And I don't believe Matt will be here next week. So you're going to have a two-week break. Well, yeah, about 2 week break from Matt, as he'll miss the next week. So next week's episode will be with me and most likely James Grande. So we will see you next week for the newest edition of the Fantasy Alarm Fantasy Baseball Podcast.